Okay, I like this. This is upbeat and gunning. Who is this? Kevin picked this?
Yeah, this is a pick from Kevin. It is Living Color.
That's Living Color?
Yeah.
Right on.
Doesn't tell me which song. Do you know which song it is?
You don't know. We don't care. Leave it out. It's good stuff.
That rocks.
So we're going to talk a little music for a change. We've been talking a lot of stuff. Politics, schools, education, vaccines, impossible burgers, Choco Tacos. Let's talk Bruce. Anybody who knows me knows that Bruce has a restraining order out against me. I'm kidding. A little bit. So my affinity for Bruce Springsteen goes back to my youth on the East Coast. I know a lot of people in the West Coast never got Bruce. Bruce has always been more popular in Portland than he is in Seattle. That freaked me out. Is this a... Yep. Five. I've seen Bruce in concert 53 times since I was 15 years old. I've seen Bruce in probably about 9 states. But I'm not going to see Bruce at this next tour in 2023. He's playing shows here in Seattle and down in Portland. I'm not sure if they call it the Rose Garden anymore in Portland or what. I know he'll be playing Climate Pledge Arena here in Seattle in February. Part of an American tour that's going to become a European tour. It's going to become a stadium tour after that. He and the E Street Band hitting the road for the first time in 6 years since they did the River for its anniversary. I actually got to take my younger daughter to that 6 years ago. She was 12. And we got to see Bruce at the Key Arena doing the River Tour. River came out when I was 15. You know those albums that you find when you're really young in your teenage years and they just kind of, that's what sets who you are. I think the River's probably that album. I was always a big Who fan. I was always a big Stones fan. Always a big Beatles fan. But Bruce started with Darkness and then the River just made me who I am as a music fan, at least, as a music fan. And I got to meet Bruce at his book signing about 5 years ago, I want to say, when he did his memoir, Born to Run. I had to buy a book and wait in line to get it autographed and get my picture taken with Bruce. They actually had to separate me, security, from Bruce when it was my turn. Because he had how meet and greets go at a book signing. You get a couple seconds with the author or the celebrity, whoever that is. And then you get your picture, and then they move you on. And I shook Bruce's hand. I told him, I said, look, man, your music changed my life. You made me the person I am, the father I am, the brother I am, the friend I am, all became from what your music has meant to me. Can I give you a hug? And he said, yeah. And I gave Bruce a big hug, and I just kind of lingered a little longer than they wanted me to, and they separated us and had me go and get out of line and move so the next person could come up. So when Bruce's tour was announced and dates in Portland and Seattle were announced, most of the friends I have on social media are like, man, I mean, you must be psyched. Bruce is coming. And then I started getting wind about some of the tickets that had gone on sale for his earlier East Coast shows. This show, the tour kicks off a little early next year in Tampa. My sister, who's now living down in Tampa, has been with me to Bruce when she was a younger girl and wanted to take her daughter to see Bruce. And she tried to get tickets down in Tampa and just got priced out. It's the phenomenon called dynamic pricing. And if you're not sure how, I mean, first off, ticket prices have become insane of late. And not just for Bruce, for anybody. You can spend $700, $500, $1,000 to see a Paul McCartney or a Rolling Stone or whomever it might be that you're big on. The Chili Peppers just played, Rage Against the Machine, U2, whomever it is. Garth Brooks, Keith Urban just played. Kenny Chesney just played a stadium show. Country artists get big money for their shows as well. Taylor Swift, Beyonce, everybody gets this incredible prices for tickets. But this dynamic pricing is a whole new beast. Are you familiar with how dynamic pricing works, Matt?
Not terribly familiar with it. I grasp the general idea, but elaborate a little more.
So tickets in the venue go on sale. And if you ever bought tickets online, when tickets go on sale, 10 o'clock Friday morning, whenever they go on sale, everybody waits in queue and gets their credit card in their hand or make sure their Ticketmaster account is all set and their card works. Because when you get in queue, the tickets just start plucking them out of the seats. And the algorithm, as fast as people can come in from 10,000 different portals. and these tickets start going. So when you get the tickets, you've got like 12 minutes to complete your order, and they'll hold the tickets while you complete your order. And, you know, do I want to sit there? Oh, maybe it's I didn't want to be on the side, but what's the best ticket available? Ooh. And you buy your tickets. With dynamic pricing, when you select tickets, they're put in your queue, but until you buy them, you're in a bidding war with other buyers who've also been offered the same tickets, and they keep raising the price. You can click on a ticket that was originally listed for $300 a seat, which is nuts. You know, I don't want to tell you stories about how I saw the Stones in Philadelphia in 1978 for $11 on the Some Girls tour. You know, nowadays those Stones tickets go for $1,400. But you're in line, or you're in the queue. First off, you got to be a member of a VIP or a fan club to have an early pre-sale. Who's got the early pre-sale code? They get tickets before they all go on sale. Because, you know, all the good seats, by the time tickets go on sale to the general public, Friday morning at 10 o'clock, all the good ones are gone. To the you know, fan clubs and the VIPs. Because, you know, American Express has a VIP. If you're an American Express card holder, you become a VIP and you can buy tickets an hour before anybody else. We always talk about upselling and, you know, there's these firewalls on everything. Now there's firewalls on buying tickets to shows. Got to be a VIP, got to be a club member, got to be a fan of the show, of the card holder of whatever it might be. Got to eat an impossible sausage at Cracker Barrel to get in line early to buy tickets for Springsteen.
So you can then go into the VIP section and not watch the show and text people photos and talk during the concert.
Well, I hate that too. I know. It drives me nuts. But I don't even think it's even VIP, like a VIP section. You're a VIP fan ticket buyer. You've got early access to get a shot at the seats that are available. And that's all polluted the concert experience. The prices are nuts. You know, I'm just the old guy, get off my lawn guy now, and I've seen Bruce 50 times. Nothing can ever compare to the memories I have of seeing Bruce. You know, driving 7 hours in the back of an open dump truck in February, leaving Maryland, going to North Carolina to see a Springsteen show on the River Tour. It was 1981, spring of 81. Freezing our brain. I mean, we were literally huddling sleeping bags with a, you know, trying not to die of frostbite on the way to the show. But that's you know, you were willing to do that. Sleeping out on the sidewalks overnight to buy tickets. Not just for Bruce, but for a lot of bands. For The Who, for a lot, Blue Oyster Cult. I love Blue Oyster Cult. For The Stones. But when you see fans in line, in the queue, getting there at 10 o'clock in the morning, logging on, having their computer, the whole nine yards, you pick your seats. And while you're deciding if those are the seats you want, other people are also deciding on those seats and they're bidding. And the seat that you logged on for $300 is now $500. And you still now I really want it for $500, but you're competing with, it's like a live auction. You're competing with other people. Now it's $700. Now it's $900. Now it's $13. A seat that was, there's an example in the Washington Post wrote a story about this Bruce Springsteen's tour, these ticket sales for this upcoming tour have been a disaster. Because, and I'll get into this in a moment, but there's an example in this article where a woman who selected tickets for $300, and by the time she was able to make the purchase, to complete the order, to buy the tickets, they were $3,000 a seat. Because of dynamic pricing and a live bidding war with other fans on those tickets.
Did it say what price she started at?
$300.
$300.
And then by the time the bidding was over and she decided to pull the trigger, and as the price raised, her apprehension grew. She didn't know whether she wanted to pull the trigger or not.
$3,000. Wow.
And she bought them, and that may seem crazy to a lot of people. Even to me as a Bruce fan, that seems crazy. But Bruce is like 72 years old, and he hasn't toured in 6 years. And he said he'll never announce a farewell tour. He said he'll just, when he feels like it's time to stop touring, he'll stop touring. So you never know if this is the last time you'll see him. When I took my daughter 6 years ago, I thought this might be the last time I get to see Bruce. He's 72 years old.
Well, for a lot of people, that's going to change the price calculation.
Yes.
Because if they're afraid that they won't get to see him again, then they might pay a much less reasonable price to make sure they can get in on
it. That's exactly what the motivation is. And now I'm going to get into the relationship Bruce has with his audience, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people share this. Springsteen's your blue-collar guy. You know, your blue jean-wearing guy. He's a hard-working, four-hour shows. You know, Bruce had one little incident about maybe 3 years ago where he was doing shots at tequila in a parking lot. He was out riding his motorcycle in New Jersey. He met some fans. Bruce's fans are crazy. I'm one of them. And he's doing shots of tequila with his fans. And a state trooper saw him and pulled him over and wrote him for a DUI. Right? That's the only trouble Bruce has ever got in. Bruce has this relationship with his fans where he's one of them. He's a working man, you know? Sings about factory life and the whole nine yards. So for Bruce to get $5,000 a ticket for some of his seats, fans are calling it a betrayal. You know, how could Bruce do this? You're not one of us anymore. And remember, like last year, Bruce sold his whole catalog, his entire record catalog, for like $500 million. It was $550 million for an advertising company to own his catalog, to re-release his material, to license his material for sales in commercials and all those things. So Bruce has already sold out for $500 million. For Bruce to have then dynamic pricing take over his tour ticket sales and have fans be his fans, long-term fans. I haven't missed a tour since 1978. I've seen every tour Bruce has done since 78, multiple times often. But I didn't want to jump into that. You know, I've got friends who got really good seats at face value. You know, that happens. You know, that's the ones I want. Those got them right at face value. Never got into a bidding war. Boom. Got them. Done deal. Most people spend $500 to $800 to see Bruce at this tour in various locations. Some people, as I mentioned, spend $3,000, $5,000 or more to see Bruce. And then there's the question, well, whose call was this? Was this Bruce's call? Was this the promoter's call? Was it the venue's call? You know, and smart people who know the industry are saying, you know what? Bruce has ultimate control on what the tickets sell for. He knew that dynamic pricing would be put into place. And the thing about dynamic pricing is it's a way to combat scalpers. You know, most days, nowadays, big companies buy up hundreds, if not thousands, of tickets to shows and put them on for sale on the aftermarket, the secondary market, your Razor Gator, your StubHubs, whatever it might be. There's lots of great, you know, I've bought many tickets on the aftermarket because I didn't get in the initial buy and I don't mind paying for them. You know, one factor in all this is that we've been away from shows for 2, 3, 4 years. You know, we haven't been we've been pent up. We talked the other day, but, you know, is it safe to go to shows? Would you be willing to go to shows and risk COVID to go see a show? People will risk anything. People will risk COVID to get a sample at Costco. Now the Costco samples are back. You know, people don't care. People are pent up. People want to get out and have fun.
And get that cheap Costco hot dog.
Boy, we could talk about that too. We did talk about this afternoon when I was doing John and Sherry show. People, Costco samples are back, and those people are savages. It's like they haven't eaten since their last Costco sample. You know, it's just scary. But with Bruce and ticket prices, there's a real sense of, you know, that's Bruce's whole image was the working man's friend, you know, one of us, blue collar guy. And you know, Bruce is the one who set he didn't set an upper ceiling on the most a dynamic seat could go for. He knew that dynamic seating would be a part of the buying process. And like all other shows, the price of tickets on everything has gone up through the roof because we're so pent up. But he didn't set a top, and he'll get that money. It's not like a scalper will get it. He'll end up getting it. And he's got some damage control to do to his image. An image that he's been recording for 50 years. I think the first album came out in 72, so it's like a 50-year anniversary of his Greetings from Asbury Park album. And now, because of this one thing, well, it's not a small thing. Because of this incident, his whole reputation is tanked. And before you text the show at 888-973-5476, I know a lot of you hate Bruce because he's political and he's liberal and he played at the Obama inauguration. That's cool. You know, I worry about Ted Nugent sometimes. Well, first off, because Ted's a dingbat. But I love Ted Nugent. I love the Ten Fingers of Doom. I love the Motor City Madman. Intensity, Intensities is one of the greatest live albums of all time. Free For All is a great record. You know, it's one thing to say that stand on stage and say, you know, I believe that this and this and the world is the working class and yada yada yada. When Ted Nugent says he wants to shove his guitar up somebody's hoo ha, or a machine gun up somebody's hoo ha, and he has said that on stage, that's a little too much. That's a little nutty. That's a little whack jobby. You know. Artists have, we talked about before how Jon Stewart spoke up for the veterans in Washington, D.C., and celebrities use their platform, use their mouthpiece, their megaphone for causes they believe in. artists do the same thing. If you think artists ought to just shut up and play, you know, there are commentators on sports broadcasting, not local, national, said basketball players ought to just shut up and dribble. You know, these guys have the right to speak up, and if they got a big microphone, they're going to reach more people. That's how it works. But, you know, Bruce, $5,000 to see Bruce, I love him. And I don't know if I might spend $5,000 to have dinner with him at his farm in New Jersey. That I might do. I might forego sending my kid to college for a year, tell her to tough it out. You know, go work at the McDonald's or Cracker Barrel or wherever for a year. I'm going to see Bruce at his cottage in his farmhouse in New Jersey. But I wouldn't pay $5,000 for a seat for one show. That's not this. I don't know if I'd have to be on stage singing with him. And I almost was once. I'll tell you that story sometime. I've been on stage singing with Roger Daltrey from The Who. I've been on stage singing with Sammy Hagar at a concert. I've led a blessed life. I played cowbell with Blue Oyster Cult. Like I pulled my shirt up, hung my belly out like Will Ferrell did. It was great. I mean, it was like a moment. Nobody gets to do this kind of stuff. But I wouldn't pay $5,000 to sit in the stands and watch anybody. I think that's nuts for a night. Tell me what you think. Is there anybody you'd pay $5,000 to see? Anybody? 888-973-5476. This is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. We're glad you're with us. Don't go anywhere.
Seems okay, babe. You wake up and find that you're alone. 'Cause I'll be gone.
Sorry, I could listen to this all night.
So could I.
This is Alison Krauss and Robert Plant.
The
song is called Gone, Gone, Gone. I'd pay a lot of money to see Robert Plant again. I saw Plant and Page. Never saw Zeppelin. Saw Plant and Page out at the Gorge. It was a phenomenal show. A lot of great texts on this subject, by the way. If they could bring back, okay, that's a go. I might pay $5,000 if I could see Johnny Cash or Elvis. Somebody else wrote in, texted in.
Yeah, those two.
You know, those kind of things.
That would be amazing.
I never got to see Bob Marley live. You know, I never got to see Prince live, and that might be one of my greatest regrets.
Yeah. My wife never got to see Tom Petty.
I got to see Tom Petty numerous times, including the last time he played over at Safeco Field.
Wow.
That way, and I'll make it quick, but that was one of the weirdest experiences live ever, because there was a song where the PA blew out during the middle of the show, and the band's stage monitors and their in-ear monitors, and when people play live big shows like that, of course, all live bands have stage monitors so they can hear the other musicians playing and play live and still hear the bass, the guitar, the drums, their vocals. A lot of bands, a lot of big performers have in-ear monitors, which means they can hear directly into their ears exactly what they're playing, so they can hear what they're doing and make sure they stay in tune, play in tune. Well, the house PA went down to Tom Petty, but the band's stage monitors and ear monitors worked, so they played the whole song, not knowing that the sound had gone out in the building. I mean, the place went quiet, and the band just kept playing. And I guess you could still hear it up close because you could hear the stage monitors playing. But back where I was in the, you know, imagine the stage was just inside the center field fence, and we're sitting right behind third base in the seats of the stadium over at Safeco, which is now T-Mobile. I should do it credit. But then it was Safeco. And the band played the whole song. And eventually the crowd started chanting, "We can't hear you. We can't hear you." It had 40-some thousand people chanting, "We can't hear you." And they couldn't hear that, because they're still got their in-ear monitors. And they played the whole song, and then everything shut down for 25 minutes while they figured out why they blew the house PA and rekindled the PA and got things going back up and resumed the show. And then Tom passed away not too long after that. So, you know, I maybe after we lose Bruce, I'll regret not paying $5K to see this tour. I think I'd pay $5K to see somebody I never got the chance to see. You know, I'm lucky. I got to see Freddie Mercury before he passed with Queen. You know, I never saw Marley, never saw Prince. My wife saw Prince. Said it was the most phenomenal thing she'd ever seen in her life. She's been to a lot of shows with me. And I saw Prince on TV at the Super Bowl halftime show, one of the greatest ever. You see Prince at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction when they played My Guitar Gently Weeps and burned the building to the ground, playing the guitar solo while My Guitar Gently Weeps. That's the kind of artist Prince was. But I don't know that I'd pay enough to see anybody. Jerry Garcia, somebody just texted in, a 206. I regret not getting to see Jerry Garcia, not seeing the Dead before Jerry died. I saw the Dead numerous times with Jerry, dozens of times. Some of them I don't even remember. I took my little one, her first show ever. My older daughter, I should say, when she was six. We saw the Dead at the Memorial Stadium concert here in Seattle. My little one saw the Dead when she was 6 years. She doesn't remember it, of course. But she still got the ticket stub, you know?
Who would have ever thought that John Mayer would end up playing with the Dead?
You'd be amazed who are deadheads, closet deadheads.
When I first saw that, I was like, really?
Yeah.
It was a surprise at the time.
Yep. I would pay to see that. I'd pay to see people I missed. I don't know if I'd pay to see what I've already seen. There's a story out of the BBC, so you know it's honest. You know, these days you can't trust where you get your information. People on the right don't trust CNN or MSNBC. People on the left don't trust Fox. I think everybody trusts the BBC, right? If you want good information, get it outside of the USA, especially information about our own political venues. There's a story of the BBC that says the rising curiosity about a subject that just kind of flipped me out. The subject is open relationships. And that can open relationships when you and your loved one take on pinch hitters, backups, relief pitchers, whatever you want to frame it. You know, polygamous relationships, people that live, you know, with three people in a household, three people in a relationship, or open relationships where you just give like a weekend pass or something. You swinger types out there, you know, whatever happens outside of state doesn't count. What happens in another country doesn't count. I couldn't do that. I couldn't. I won't let somebody else drive my car, let alone, you know, let alone my bride, you know? No way.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But according to a study, and again, this is in the BBC, there is a growing curiosity, fascination, acceptance, mainstreaming of open relationships. Traditional one-on-one partnerships, whether it be one-on-one, man-woman, woman-woman, two guys, whatever, even those are becoming antiquated to open relationships. And they say there are fulfilling elements of those. You know, boredom isn't an issue anymore. A lot of relationships just lose their zip, you know. I mean, a running joke in most sitcoms has been, you know, same sex forever, you know, that kind of thing. I think Fred Flintstone even made that joke, and they didn't sleep in the same bed. But open relationships are becoming more common. I think that's a slippery slope, a dangerous thing to take on, man. I think when you don't treasure somebody enough to, you know, keep it in the garage when you're not driving it, you know, pardon my euphemisms, I think you really risk self-respect and the respect of your partner and the respect you have for your partner.
One-on-one relationships are hard enough to get right. Why would I want to enter into a relationship where I'm disappointing more than one person simultaneously?
That's a fear. It's a genuine fear, honest fear. And that's another joke that's made all the time. You know, gosh, how can the poor folks who were polygamists, you know, God, one wife nagging on me is plenty. Three? Ugh.
You know what's amusing about that, though, is that those reality shows like the Sister Wives show on TLC and fictional shows based in that, like Big Love, are very popular with women, which was not what I would have expected.
Well, that makes sense to me. I can see why women would find that attractive. They get the night off, you know? Seriously. You know, I mean, how many women wouldn't want to have have a helping hand raising the kids, doing the shopping, cleaning the house, whatever. And I don't mean to be a misogynistic kind of a guy, but in a more traditional housemaker role, why wouldn't you want backup?
I had an ex of mine say once that I was a good guy, but I was heavy.
Heavy as in your body size?
No, just sort of heavy, like the emotional and psychological load of being in a relationship with me was somewhat heavy for her. I'm thinking, well, okay. Many hands make light work. There you go.
That's how you pitched it to her?
Well,
she didn't go for it, did she?
That might have been my pitch. I had the nerve to bring that up.
Nice. I that's the thing. Different strokes for different folks, man. You know, whatever makes you happy, whatever keeps your partner happy. If you guys can still maintain respect for each other and love for each other and care, genuine care, and bring in a pinch hitter, big strong right hander from the bullpen every once in a while when you need him. You just don't have the juice to go the whole nine, you know.
But it's so crazy.
You're giving it all I got, coach. I just can't get a job done. You go for the big right hander.
But it's so crazy now. I mean, you know, not to wax nostalgic about a bygone era. But my parents, you know, they met because my father ended up visiting his friend's church and he saw this lady singing in the choir, and that was my mom. They've been together ever since.
Okay. Nice. But, lovely.
But nowadays, you read all these stories about how, particularly in the internet age, younger people, like, particularly, I think this is a big thing in Asian cultures, like in Japan, young people are dating less and preferring more virtual reality and virtual friendships. So I'm thinking,
really?
Okay, so we're reaching this point where we're already struggling to evolve and relate to each other one-on-one. So then we throw this into the mix. Are we just, as a significant portion of society just becoming unable to relate to other human beings? And this doesn't sound like it's going to fix it.
No, I think you're right. I think it's going to exacerbate the problem. It's throwing gasoline on a fire. We already have trouble, you know, making human contact. We're so stuck into our phones. We're so eyes down when we walk through the streets. You know, I don't do that. I look up. I say hi to everybody when I walk by him. That's just who I've always been. I've been very outgoing, very gregarious. I was a bartender growing up. You know, I learned how to engage everybody. But people don't do that anymore. And you're saying that there's a trend toward people not wanting to get into relationships, real human relationships. I guess you don't take a chance. You never get hurt. I guess there's that element of it, a potential positive of it. And given the fact that we're overpopulating the planet and we don't have enough food or space for everybody, maybe we should let a few people not date. We should let a few people not ever meet up and not ever procreate, not ever populate. You know, maybe that's how we'll cure overpopulation. You guys just, I'm in love with my phone. Good for you. Leave the humans for us.
I'll stay at home and have intimate conversations with Siri. Our Alexa.
Ooh.
Our Siri and you, Alexa,
you're
because now I'm
AI
poly.
Polygamous. Look at you, man. There you go. Nice. This is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's my good man, Matt Butler. And Kevin in there helping out. Yeah, well, Kevin will be in next week. We're going to pass Matt around like a party favor here at Cairo next week. Been working three, four different shows in time.
Speaking of dysfunctional relationships.
Yes, yes, I know, right? Moment of silence for poor Jack Stein. We passed around the dial until he just couldn't take it anymore and decided to stay in California. We'll be right back after these. Don't go anywhere. We'll read your texts, and there have been a lot of amazing texts. Thank you. What is this?
It's George Clinton, man.
Nice. Didn't he just do a farewell tour, right? A P-Funk farewell tour?
Fifth?
What's that?
The fifth farewell tour?
Is that the fifth? Is that what it is? I think I've seen five Who farewell tours over the years.
Farewell forever.
Yeah,
again.
Exactly. Farewell forever again, my friend. This is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. We want to thank you guys for tuning in and sticking with us and giving us your feedback on the text line. We appreciate that you have an opinion and input into the show, and we will continue to work hard in getting this better every time we do it. Matt and I, Kevin and I, whoever they have producing, I'm lucky to have Matt, but he's a popular guy around here, and they want him in other shows helping out wherever we need him to do. I appreciate you, buddy.
I'm a little too popular these days. I'd like to be less popular and just sort of shrink into the bushes a little bit, like Homer Simpson in that GIF.
GIF, I always called it GIFs. Is it GIF? I never know what to call those things.
Stands for Graphic Interchange Format, for all the nerds who care, five of you.
Look at you. But the music has gotten as many compliments as the programming around here. That tells me right there, you're the most popular show thing we got. On the text line tonight, we talked about a lot of different things. We talked about the young kid who found a pill at the park, and it was fentanyl, and he is in the hospital, but he's doing well. A lot of folks had things to say about that. You know, my wife's a helicopter parent, and I'm glad she is. She kills most of the plants, 70% of the plants in our house, but she's a helicopter parent. We talked about maybe if you can't keep a plant alive, you shouldn't be a parent, but this lady's got it going on. I mentioned that sometimes school is the safe haven for a kid who's having gender fluidity, not knowing who they should identify, who they are and what makes them happy. Texter says school will never be a better parent. That's a 360. And you know what? You have a valid point. You may be right. Talk about Brittany Griner. Fair sentence is all we ask for. So a lot of people say, you know, you do the crime, you do the time. She knew what she was doing. You know, it wasn't her first trip to Russia. Got to be careful.
One thing on that story that I actually just read today was that it's not just a prison. It's a penal colony, which people have investigated what that is in Russia. It is very harsh. So she is facing potentially 9 years of a very harsh environment. It's not just jail. It's worse.
Text her from the 206. A lot of WNBA stars play in Russia during their off season. I wonder if that's not going to change after this. I bet it does. Good point. Oh, someone says, you know what? Listening to opposing points of view? I don't think you are. Well, we try to. It's a work in progress. We see progress, not perfection, right?
Right.
So you keep coming back. We'll keep trying. I promise. Both you guys are doing a great job. Welcome. Thank you very much. From the 360. I think they mean you two guys in there, not me. Talking about me. Impossible meat was a big topic too. Saying that they are more healthy, plant-based, or more healthy than meat is a falsehood. They're chock full of sodium. You know what? I'll look into that because you're probably right, but a lot of bad things about red meat too. I think all things in moderation, you know, all things in moderation. We talked about the Cracker Barrel. That's how the Impossible Meat story came up. Somebody goes, I love Stuckey's much better than Cracker Barrel. Okay.
There's a name I hadn't heard in a while.
Stuckey's, yeah, that's more of a West Coast thing, right? Who would you pay to see in the show, in concert? Who would you pay $5,000 for? Johnny Cash, Motorhead, Megadeth, Slayer. Nice. Okay.
I would pay $5,000 to see the Smiths reunited with Johnny Marr and Morrissey, or Morrissey before he was old cranky Morrissey.
Yeah, he kind of took a turn for the weird, didn't he? But then again, you know, I'm human and I need to be loved. I'm a little Smith.
Just like everybody else does.
Yep. I'm still bummed about Michael Jackson getting canceled at the Tacoma Dome on his bad tour. Never got to see Michael Jackson. I hadn't even thought about that one. I never saw Michael either. Prince would have been my go-to guy, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, funny, I thought Michael Jackson would be canceled by now, but last time I was in Vegas, they still had a Michael Jackson hologram show. It was being advertised.
Would you pay to see a hologram?
Not of Michael Jackson.
Well, who would you pay to see a hologram of anybody? Would that be fake enough to buy it?
Yeah, I don't think the part of the concert is the moment and being real and being really there. I don't think that would pass. That would feel like a ripoff to me. I couldn't do it.
I'll close out with Bradley from the 253 because he's got the smartest comment of the night. If I get a time machine for $5,000, I could see anybody I wanted to. Smart. Thanks, guys. Hey, we appreciate you guys. We'll be back next week, I promise. I'm Spike O'Neill. This is Cairo Nights at 97.3. If you like what you heard, let us know. If you'd like us to do better, let us know. 888-973-5476 is the text. Oh, man. I saw Whitney live, too. I did. I was dating this girl that I was crazy about, and she went to go see Whitney Houston, so I stomached it. And she was great. It was like this tour, her first tour, 86, I believe it was. That's a tragic loss, Whitney. What a voice. Damn you, Bobby Brown. All right, kids, we'll see you. Have a great, safe Seafair weekend, everybody. Lots of crazy traffic this weekend. Highway 5, or Highway 5 is shutting down to one lane. Blue Angels, Seafair, football, baseball, storm basketball. It's all waiting for you out there. Leave early. You won't want to miss the show. See ya.